state legislators are forced back into session, told to try again to redraw Florida's congressional districts. A closer look coming right up. Good Tuesday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. The show is always live at 9, and now subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, we'll take your calls as lawmakers take yet another stab at redrawing the state's political map. What are your questions? Get on the line now, 549-2937. Also coming up, Snapshot St. Augustine, putting a spotlight on America's first city. Plus, how you can enjoy a girl's day out this weekend, courtesy of WJCT and Baptist Health. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, Florida legislators are back in Tallahassee this week for yet another special two-week session. They've been ordered to redraw for the third time now the state's congressional districts, including those of our own representatives, Andrew Crenshaw and Corrine Brown. Now, all of this came about after the Florida Supreme Court ordered lawmakers to redraw the map. They ruled that the Republican-led redistricting process was, in their words, tainted by illegal partisan intent. GOP leaders in both the State House and Senate say they disagree with that ruling, but they're vowing to have a productive session at taxpayers' expense. So what can voters expect? Well, Florida Times Union Capitol Bureau Chief Tia Mitchell is on the line now from Tallahassee with a closer look at all of this and how it will affect us. Tia, always great to talk to you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And here's our question to callers. What are your questions for the Times Union's Tia Mitchell when it comes to this special session in Tallahassee that will redraw the state's congressional maps? That includes the maps of current Congressman Ron DeSantis, Andrew Crenshaw, Congresswoman Corrine Brown, more. Get on the line now with your calls, your questions, and comments at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show, or you could weigh in on Facebook. So, Tia, about 100 degrees in the shade Monday as lawmakers were yanked back to the Capitol in this steamy August to try for the third time now to redraw Florida's congressional districts. For those that haven't been following this closely, let's explain why the Florida Supreme Court ordered them back to the Capitol, if you would.
Well, this all goes back to the Fair Districts Amendment that was approved by voters. It's a constitutional amendment. Basically, it's an anti-gerrymandering amendment, and it says, you know, that the legislature, when it draws the map, needs to not favor a certain political party. It needs to try to keep communities whole as much as possible, create districts that are as compact as possible. And they drew maps in 2012 as a result of the 2010 census. Every 10 years, they have to redraw the map. And there have been legal challenges ever since. So this has been going on for 3 years. And as a result of legal challenges, the legislature is now drawing the map for congressional districts a third time, and really a final time, because the Florida Supreme Court has made it clear pretty much that if they don't think the legislature has adhered to those constitutional amendment this time, they likely are to take it out of the legislature's hands in the future.
House Speaker Steve Crisafulli, other Republican leaders around the state have spoken out against this. They say they believe they drew the map correctly in 2012 and again in 2014. So some frustration, I would guess, on the part of GOP leaders at this process?
Yes, very much. So the reason why the Supreme Court has invalidated several districts, saying that they were illegally gerrymandered to favor usually the Republican Party, is they say they found evidence that Republican strategists and operatives had undue influence on how the maps were drawn. And so they said, you know, it, according to their investigation and their ruling, just the Republican Party did not adhere to the amendment. And, of course, Republican leaders are saying, no, it's not us that didn't adhere to the amendment. The Supreme Court is being activist, questioning whether the Supreme Court is being politically influenced, and that's why the Supreme Court is invalidating the map. Right now, there are a couple of challenges to the court rulings, but lawmakers, for the most part, are going to redo the map, but kind of giving the lip service to go with it.
And we'll go to your calls for Capitol Bureau Chief Tia Mitchell of the Florida Times Union in just a moment at 549 2937. So let's get to the question, Tia, that many in this area care most about, how the new base map that we've all had a look at, how this affects our local Congress representatives' districts, in particular that of Congresswoman Corrine Brown. She has filed her own legal actions to dispute this process, saying that redrawing the maps will invalidate minority representation in Congress. But for both Andrew Crenshaw, Corrine Brown, Ron DeSantis, who is, by the way, giving up his seat to run for the U.S. Senate, the redrawing of the maps rejiggers those districts. Can you explain some of the changes that we're likely to see here in North Florida?
Yes. So the first thing that I want to point out is Congresswoman Brown has always kind of seen the writing on the wall. And as a result, she's always been critical of the Fair Districts Amendment because she's maintained that it kind of would decrease minority representation because she says in order to ensure that African-Americans and Latinos and other minorities get elected to Congress, you need a certain level of gerrymandering to make sure those districts are able to elect minority representatives. So she's always been a critic of the Fair District Amendment. But it passed, and the Supreme Court was very, you know, it didn't just say the maps were invalid, certain districts were invalid, but the Supreme Court in certain cases in its most recent ruling said, here's what we think you need to do to fix it. And for Brown's district, they specifically said that it currently, the way it's currently drawn, it stretches from Jacksonville to Orlando. If you look at it on a map, it's very gerrymandered. The Supreme Court ruling says at one point the district is only the width of a highway. And so they said this is not right, and you need to redraw the district. Instead of going south to Orlando, it needs to start in Jacksonville and go west to Tallahassee. That's a very dramatic shift for Corrine. She's been representing Jacksonville and Orlando minority communities, and now she would represent essentially still Jacksonville's minority communities, but it would go into Tallahassee and Quincy, which is a predominantly Black area of town. So it's a dramatic shift for her, and as a result, it affects the current seat of Representative Lynn Graham, the current seat of Andrew Crenshaw, as you mentioned. Some the Orlando districts, of course, get rewritten because of that. So there's a lot of shifting that goes on.
Lots of changes in the works as the state legislature is ordered by the Florida Supreme Court back into special session to redraw Florida's congressional map. What are your questions? What are your thoughts? Let's go to your calls right now at 549-2937. Gail in St. Augustine. Hey, Gail, good morning. Go ahead.
Yes, I just want to express my frustration with our legislature that just seems to be totally unwilling to accept the will of the people as amendments are passed because the population is frustrated with the way the legislature has been doing their job. We pass amendments, give them direction that we don't want these gerrymandered districts. We want the fair districts, and the legislature ignores it and just, you know, that's what they want again. This Amendment 1, the hijacking of that by the legislature, it's just shameful that the legislature will not pay attention to what the people of Florida are asking them and telling them to do. I mean, they're supposed to work for us, and yet they're completely unresponsive, even when amendments are passed to give them direction. And thank you. I'll take your response offline.
Thank you. That's Gail in St. Augustine. And Tia, here's a similar tweet from a listener named Mike. The Florida legislature, he tweets, will never do what voters want. They pervert the people's will at every turn. What about that feedback, Tia Mitchell?
I think, well, as I said before, the one constellation, if you believe that, you know, it's the legislature who has not adhered to the Fair District Amendment, and you agree with the Supreme Court, the consensus is this is legislature's last chance to get it right. And if they don't, the consensus is the court will either draw the map or somehow come up with a process that takes it out of the legislature's hand. So, yes, this is their third attempt, but even legislatures have said this is our final attempt for this congressional map.
And it's 549-2937 to join the show right now. What about frustration over redistricting in other states, Tia, has led to independent commissions redrawing the lines because both major political parties in many other states have been accused of, you know, tainting the process to benefit their own party. And this is a bipartisan affliction if you look around the country. So we've seen a trend in recent years of some states saying, let's just hand this off to an independent third-party commission so that we can try to ensure a fairer process. And I'm sure you followed that. What are your thoughts about that?
Yes, I have followed it, and I know, of course, Democrats have talked about trying to push that legislation, trying to propose similar legislation in Florida. Of course, we know Republicans are not just in charge in Florida. They have a supermajority in the House and, of course, a majority in the Senate. They control the governor's office. So it's at this point, the legislature, I don't see them approving a bill like this. However, you know, if there's a citizen initiative and they get enough signatures, they could try to get a constitutional amendment on the ballot, just like the Fair District Amendment was a citizen initiative that got put on the ballot. So it could happen, but right now nothing is officially in motion to try to get that on the ballot. But definitely, I think progressive organizations and Democrats are talking about it. I think it also depends on ultimately, you know, we have this special session to redo the congressional map. We have a special session in October to redo the state Senate map. And so I think people are waiting to see if they think in the end that the legislature adheres to the amendment and comes up with maps that the groups that have challenged what has been done in the past, if they're satisfied and say, you know what, they finally got it right, they're finally doing what the amendment tells them to do, maybe that will, you know, somewhat quash those who say we need to go with independent redistricting commissions.
549-2937 to join the show right now. Will in Jacksonville. Hello, Will. Good morning. How are you today?
Hey, I'm great. How are you?
Great. Go ahead.
I just think that it's interesting. One of the things that we just said was that gerrymandering may be necessary in order to ensure that minorities get representation in the legislature, and I just don't really feel like that's the right way to make that happen. I think that if we want to increase voter education or increase voter participation of minorities within well-drawn districts that are representative of the population, that's one thing. But drawing lines in order to have minorities represented doesn't quite seem fair either.
All right. Thanks for that. That's Will in Jacksonville. And of course, Tia, that's Congresswoman Brown's argument that
right.
her district needed to be drawn the way it was to ensure African-American representation in Congress. Can you give us and that goes back to the 1970s, 1980s in Florida. But let's talk about the lay of the land when it comes to that issue right now in 2015.
Yes. And it is a very complicated issue because, you know, it goes back to the Voting Rights Act. And it goes back, like you said, to at a time when Black Democrats in Florida kind of formed an alliance with the Republican Party because they felt the Democratic Party, which was in power at the time, was not doing enough to ensure minority representation both at the state level in the legislature and in Congress. And so what the court and critics of gerrymandering have said is that the Republican Party in many ways has taken it too far. Let me give you an example. Corrine Brown, for any minority, Democrats in general, when you look at percentages, they say you don't need to have a majority. If minorities are a certain percentage, that increases the ability of a minority to get elected in a district, even if they don't make up over 50% of the population. And so what the court has said is you put too many minorities in certain districts, too many Democrats in certain districts, and you did it not because you're trying to help the minorities get elected in a district. You're trying to help all the Republicans get elected in neighboring districts by taking out their Democrats, taking out their minorities, and increasing the Republican percentage in neighboring districts.
And isn't that process called packing and bleaching, i.e., packing African-American and Democratic voters into a gerrymander district and bleaching or ensuring white Republican voters in a larger percentage of surrounding Republican districts?
Right. That's the way it's been described, and that's what the Supreme Court criticized, particularly in Corrine Brown's district. They said you didn't have to put so many Democrats into her district. You didn't have to draw it like this. And she still could be reelected. You know, the way the sample map that's on the table now where the district goes to Tallahassee, it still has a sizable minority population. It still looks good for Corinne Brown. It's not a given, of course, but I mean, still would be her seat to lose.
And has
drawn in a much different way.
Has Corinne Brown withdrawn her legal action, or will she continue to fight on?
So what happened yesterday was, initially, she added her legal action on to an existing court case that was challenging the constitutionality of her district. So she kind of said she wanted to intervene to defend her district. Well, that plaintiff then withdrew their lawsuit yesterday. So now Corinne Brown has to find a new lawsuit to join or start from scratch. But right now, she is back at square one in challenging the current redistricting that's going on.
And you've also written about the burden on taxpayers of all these special sessions. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, I had a reader call me after reading a column I wrote just about the redistricting coming up. And he left a voicemail, and I called him back, and he was just, you know, similar to what we've heard today. You know, people are upset. They believe that the legislature has not done the will of the people, and now those same people are having to pay for the legislature to come back. For this is their second special session on redistricting. A third is coming up in October. And so, you know, I asked, and roughly it's, you know, about, what, $12,800 a day for a 12-day special session comes up to $153,600 plus round-trip travel for all 160 legislators. So, I mean, it's six figures every time the legislature has to come back.
And there is frustration we're getting from our listeners. Here's an email from Hudson. Currently, there are no real consequences for legislators that defy the public will until we have a process for impeachment or recall of legislators and the governor in Florida. He writes, this kind of undemocratic behavior will continue. There is no recall mechanism in Florida for voters upset about this or that action. Correct, Tia?
I don't think so. However, especially in the House, they are reelected every 2 years. So that's what lawmakers will tell you. They'll say, if you don't like the way we're doing our job, find someone else, replace me. Now, of course, that's easier said than done when you talk about incumbents and the influence of money. But at the end of the day, voters have power at the polls. And that's, you know, to me, something that when I try to write my column and communicate with readers, I try to help remind readers what power they do have. You know, at the end of the day, this is a representative form of government. And if you don't feel like your people that you sent to Tallahassee are representing your interests, you're supposed to let them know, either by reaching out to them, emailing them, calling them, going up to them when you see them at a public forum or when you see them at the grocery store and telling them what you think. And if you don't think they're representing you, and then it's time to make your voice heard at the ballot box. But this doesn't happen very often in Florida when it comes to incumbents.
Well, and as you've pointed out, that's because the districts are drawn to favor incumbency.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, very much so. I mean, just especially, you know, with the House seats are drawn in a very kind of, you know, they're either Democratic seats or Republican seats. And except for a few swing districts, it's hard for them to change parties. But even, you know, when there's an open seat, you know, you could, even if you're a Republican, you don't have to pick the same Republican each time.
Always great to speak with the incisive and insightful Tia Mitchell, the Capitol Bureau Chief for the Florida Times Union. Tia, thanks so much for getting on the phone with us this morning. We appreciate it, and we'll continue to follow the process.
Thank you so much. I'm headed in to listen to them talk about redistricting right now.
All right. Always hard at work. That's Tia Mitchell on the line from the TU calling in from the Capitol for us. Much more still ahead later. How you can enjoy a girl's day out this weekend, courtesy of WJCT. And Baptist Health. But up next, spotlighting Snapshot St. Augustine. It's our America's First City series. That's in a moment.
Need some me time? Join Baptist Health and WJZT for our annual health event, Girls Day Out, Saturday, August 15th at the Hyatt Hotel. Be inspired with local and national speakers discussing everything from healing touch to a money boot camp. Be pampered with makeovers, massage, and a gift bag. Be nourished with breakfast and lunch. It's all good for you. Tickets and info at WJZT/BaptistGoodForYou or call 904-549-2938.
Listeners love Relax Radio.
My name is Harry Reagan. I got hooked immediately because it's just the kind of radio station I've always been looking for and never found until now.
When you make a $120 gift to WJCT, you'll receive an HD radio so you can tune in to Relax. Call 904-353-9528 or go online to wjct.org/relax for more information.
On the next Fresh Air, the past century of laws regulating sex regarding marriage, homosexuality, adultery, rape, pornography. We talk with Eric Berkowitz, author of The Boundaries of Desire. He says the past century has produced an immense amount of sex law, but the law has had trouble keeping up with changing social and moral standards. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
WJCT and Community First Credit Union are proud to announce that Mary Enworth will be this year's morning keynote speaker at Teach. Mary is co-author of Pathways to the Common Core. She is deputy director of middle schools at the Teachers Reading and Writing Project, Columbia University. Mary is just one of the many great speakers you will hear throughout the day. For more information or to purchase tickets, go to WJCT/teach.
Welcome back. Well, it's a new exhibit of fascinating images that capture old Florida, covering a wide range of events and activities in and around St. Augustine. Everything from long-lost signage to historic reenactments, views of the gorgeous shoreline and landscapes. It's all a celebration of St. Augustine's 450 years of rich history, and it's a window into this changing community as it gears up for a big commemoration event next month. Snapshot St. Augustine. It's the focus of today's look at America's first city, our regular series here on the show. And here to tell us more, we welcome photographer Ken Barrett here in studio. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you. And joining us by phone, Andrew Witt, executive director of the St. John's Cultural Council. Thanks for being on the line.
Good morning. Glad to be with you.
Ken, let's start with you. This looks to be such a beautiful exhibit. It's already up and running, courtesy, of course, of the St. John's Cultural Council. Tell us about some of these images.
Well, some of the photography is related on St. Augustine's history, of course, and it's sort of my personal view of our town and its changing environment.
Your personal view, so you had carte blanche to sort of just shoot whatever you felt like.
Well, what I've done is go back through my archives that date back to 1972, and I decided that I would go from 5 to 5, so it's from 1975 to 2015, and I just sort of picked out images that I think represents the changing town and its environment and its reenactments.
And some of the images are of structures that no longer exist, is that right?
St. Augustine's going through change all the time. Photography dates back in our city to 1842. The two oldest photographs are of the city gate, which was rebuilt in the early 1800s by the Spanish, and also a daguerreotype showing the construction of the Great Seawall at the Castillo de San Marcos. And both of those daguerreotypes are found in the Yale University collection. So St. Augustine has been photographed since the third year after the invention.
Fantastic. And of course, Andrew Witt, just walking through the historic district in St. Augustine is like walking through a living museum in a sense. It is the nation's oldest city. And as you gear up for September's 450th commemorations, this exhibit is a part of just the rich cultural offerings on display all over town, correct?
That's exactly right. I mean, one of the things that we're doing in our expanded marketing effort is the tagline that we use, and hopefully listeners have heard it, is culture around every corner, which refers to the arts and culture and heritage aspects of St. John's County and St. Augustine, is that everywhere you look in St. Augustine, there is something that is important culturally, not just to the city or to Northeast Florida, but to the history of the country.
So what are some of the most surprising images people might see?
We had a great freeze on Christmas Eve 1989 when the temperature dropped to below freezing for 3 days. And
our, shocking.
Our Great Bridge Alliance was iced over, like many of the bridges here in Duval County.
Uh-huh.
And late in the afternoon on Christmas Eve, the Department of Transportation decided to use crushed coquina from the local beach and put this over the span of the Bridge Alliance, and the salt and the shell allowed the bridge to be reopened, and I was able to go down and photograph the first stream of cars coming across the bridge back in the town from the island, which had been closed to the public for 3 days. So that's sort of an unusual and sort of a great photograph of, we never get that kind of freezing temperatures very often, but they do cripple us.
Now, you're a UF graduate in photojournalism, and so you've been at this for some time. Is shooting St. Augustine a bit of a love affair for you?
Well, it's just something that came about naturally. My parents gave me a Polaroid Swinger when I was 16, and by the early 1970s, I was using a medium format camera. I ended up in Brevard Community College operating a 4x5 camera and gravitated to the University of Florida. I entered the journalism program, and one of my professors, Mr. Parrish, said, "Ken, these photographs are good, but they're sort of arty. You might go over to the art department." So I went to the art department, and one of my teachers, Jerry Yulesman, said, "These are good photographs, Ken, but they're sort of straight." So in the course of 30 years of practicing photography, I've been able to develop my own look and feel about how I feel about photography.
And Andrew, what a jewel in the crown for the Cultural Council. What else is the Cultural Council working on as you gear up for the 450th in St. Augustine coming up in just a few weeks, actually?
Yeah, basically just 3 weeks away. There are a couple of really significant programs coming on, I think, for the whole Labor Day weekend. We're joking here that it's too bad that Pedro didn't come a couple days later, so we didn't have to go go over the Labor Day weekend. But he did, and there is just there's a series of concerts on Friday and Saturday night. The headliner on Friday night is Aaron Neville. The headliner on Saturday night is Emmylou Harris. On Sunday, the Emma Concert Association is doing almost a day-long event at the amphitheater. And then on the 8th is the procession with the church. There are bishops coming in from all over the country. Cardinal O'Malley has been appointed the from Boston, has been appointed as the representative of the Pope. You know, and that's a very significant event because when Pedro landed on September 8th, 1565, they celebrated Mass. So we know that the Catholic Church in America began here in St. Augustine, and there's a full range of ceremonial as well as a Mass that's going to be celebrated on the 8th. In addition, there are a variety of activities going on throughout the community with both that celebration and then, of course, the ongoing celebration of St. Augustine and St. John's County. We are really looking forward to it. We believe that not just for the citizens of celebrating the birthday party, but just getting the recognition that that St. Augustine deserves in its place in American history.
Global recognition is, and Andrew, isn't it global recognition? Aren't the King and Queen of Spain slated to make a visit as well?
Well, they're not coming over the Labor Day weekend. They're coming a couple weeks later. The United States-Spain International Council, which is an every 2 year event, basically all the initial Spanish colonies relations of Spain are going to be meeting in St. Augustine, and the King and Queen are going to be here. So it's a very exciting time, and of course, couched in between the King and Queen's visit and the birthday party is the Spanish Food and Wine Festival, which has become bigger and bigger every year. And that's a fabulous event that people can get tickets to. I do want to say that, you know, although we always talk about how busy St. Augustine is, we have heard, and there was probably a story in the Jacksonville paper that I think some people saw, is that there are still rooms available for people who do want to come and spend it. The traffic issues are that you come and stay in a nice hotel, and then you can walk because the downtown area is going to be closed off to automobile traffic.
It'll sure.
be pedestrian only for the festival. And so the easiest way is to come on and stay and enjoy the weekend.
Absolutely. And when they come, Ken, they need to come by the St. Johns County Administration Building and see your exhibit, Snapshot St. Augustine.
Yeah. The exhibit is open 8 to 5.
It's only open Monday through Friday because that's when the county government building is there. But we really thank the county for allowing us to brighten up the rotunda of the county administration building.
And Ken, let's close with you. One final thought about your images.
Well, the color, black and white work is sort of a shotgun effect of looking at the changes in St. Augustine. St. Augustine has constantly gone through change. We've lost buildings. We've lost part of our cultural heritage through the assimilation of so many different people coming into St. Augustine and wanting to do their own thing, so to speak. But still, St. Augustine has a rich, great legacy of having photographers come into town and record the images that are so important to our history.
Get out and see it. It's at the St. Johns County Admin Building, 500
San Sebastian Boulevard.
Andrew Witt, Executive Director of the St. Johns Cultural Council. Ken Barrett, it's Snapshot St. Augustine. Gentlemen, thanks for being with us.
And thank you.
Thank you for having me.
We're back in a moment.
America's First City is sponsored by the St. Augustine 450th Commemoration and Tapestry Exhibition.
10 years after Hurricane Katrina, New Orleans has recovered in many ways, except crime. This year, the city's murder rate is on the rise.
The increase is coming from domestic violence-related homicides, arguments between people that have turned fatal, and robberies that have turned fatal.
Crime in the Big Easy, with not-so-easy answers later, on All Things Considered from NPR News. Weekdays at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
If you love All Things Considered, consider joining us a few hours early for Afternoons on WJCT. The Takeaway offers a fresh way to look at the news, featuring critical conversations, reports from the field, and listener participation. That's followed by The World, with engaging voices to illuminate what's going on around the globe and why it matters to you. It's the smart way to spend your afternoons. Weekdays from 2 to 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Follow what's happening at WJCT, even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT-FM at wjct.org/listen. Or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT-FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
Just in case you hadn't heard, those of you still handing out business cards, you're doing it all wrong.
So the Americans will just, you know, give you a card like this in a single-handed way. And that's very rude.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Manners are everything no matter where you are. Doing business in Japan next time on Marketplace from APM.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Welcome back. Well, hundreds of children who've lost a parent in the armed forces go off to college every year, but going back to school for them can be tough with the burdens of leaving family behind and starting a new chapter without a parent. The Children of Fallen Patriots Foundation seeks to support families going through that transition by bridging the gap in the cost of higher ed. And guess what? Today, right here in Jacksonville, there is such an easy way to help out. Here in studio, we welcome Liz Zirkel, Program Manager with the Children of Fallen Patriots Foundation. Good morning, Liz.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Great to see you. And on the line, Maggie Berry Wilkinson. She's a local mom whose daughter just received a Fallen Patriots scholarship. Hi, Maggie.
Hi, how are you?
Great to talk to you. Let's begin with you, Liz. We'll talk about what people can do today to help donate to this great cause. But first, let's explain what your foundation's all about.
The foundation, Children of Fallen Patriots, came about in memory of Sergeant Delaney Gibbs, and he died while in Panama. And our founders, David and Cynthia Kim, wanted to do something to remember his sacrifice and to take care of the children left behind. Children of Fallen Patriots seeks to offer scholarships to kids whose parents died while on active duty, and we offer scholarships to those children, along with some advice and a sensitive ear.
Sure, just some support for them. And Maggie, your daughter is the lucky recipient. Tell us a little bit about your family situation and what this means for your daughter.
Well, it has been an amazing opportunity for her. She, you know, being from the state of Florida, they do have the bright futures and a few things, but, you know, the costs are getting so out of control, like for books and things like that for college. So it is, she just finished her first year and just started back for her second, and it has just made things so much easier and let her not have to worry or me about some of the things like that and that the cost, because we didn't really want her to incur a lot of expenses going through college if we could help it.
What's a typical scholarship, Liz, that a young senior going into freshman year in college can receive?
They would receive between $2,500 or $3,500. And then we'll also, that will cover tuition or living expenses or computers, those items that are directly related to the cost of education.
Wow. And today, right here in Jacksonville, people can go out to lunch and help with the cause. Can you tell us about that?
That's right. At our local, our new Chicken Salad Chick franchise is having the scoops for scholarships. And go on out and have lunch on Bay Meadows, and 10% of the proceeds will go to help out the Children of Fallen Patriots.
And that's the Chicken Salad Chick, new restaurant. That's at Bay Meadows and I-295. Just go to lunch there, and you can support this cause without doing anything beyond having a great lunch. Maggie, where's your daughter going to college? Tell us what she's doing right now.
She is attending the University of Central Florida, and she is currently majoring in political science.
Wow.
And has had an excellent experience there, and we are incredibly thankful to all the people at the Fallen Patriots for all that they do, and everybody there is just exceptionally amazing and sympathetic, and they've all been in similar situations, I believe, or at least are very, very aware.
How nice. And it's so great to hear a story like that. It's so inspiring. And there are so many families in our area that might want to take advantage of this. So again, if you want to support the cause, go have lunch today at the Chicken Salad Chick restaurant. They're at Bay Meadows and I-295. And Liz, there are other ways people can support your foundation too.
That's right. That's right. If you go to www.fallenpatriots.org, we have a different levels that people can contribute. Our Class of 19 monthly giving opportunity has just begun. And in that, you sign up, and for a donation of $19 a month, you can walk alongside a student as they start college and support them and let them know that they're in your thoughts. And then we also have the Drop and Give Me 10, which started on social media and is very exciting. And if you'll also see on the website different YouTube videos and Bear Grylls and Drew Bees and Kathy Lee Gifford, who we send our deepest condolences to.
Yeah, she just lost her husband. But you've got everyone from Kathy Lee to Matt Lauer to Andy Cohen from Bravo doing push-ups.
That's right.
On YouTube to support you.
To support. And
that's cool.
And then they donate $1 or $2 for each push-up that they do.
Very nice. Well, again, it's the Children of Fallen Patriots Foundation. Have lunch today to support them at Chicken Salad Chick at Bay Meadows and 295. Ladies, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Liz Urkel is program manager with the foundation. Local mom Maggie Wilkinson joining us again. That's the Children of Fallen Patriots Foundation. And in a moment, how you can enjoy a really fantastic Girls Day Out. Thanks to WJCT and Baptist Health. That's in a moment.
Discover the latest and greatest in independent music tonight at 11 on The Indie Endeavor.
On the next Jazz Night in America, it's drummer Albert Tootie Heath. We're celebrating his 80th birthday in style. I sit down to chat with Tootie and his brother, saxophonist Jimmy Heath. Join me, Christian McBride, for some brotherly love on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
WJCT and the Florida Theater are proud to bring me, Michael Feldman, and my show, What Do You Know, to the Florida Theater in Jacksonville on February 20th. Tickets available now at the Florida Theater box office by phone at 904-355-2787 or online at floridatheater.com.
Big day at the job. Make it break time. They're all waiting for you right now in the conference room. Well, they're going to have to wait because you're not leaving the radio until you hear the end of that story. Snap Judgment from NPR. Storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, this weekend is your chance to take a little time to reconnect with everything that's good for you. Join WJCT and Baptist Health for an incredible day of health and wellness at this year's Girls Day Out, Good For You event. Our own CEO, Michael Boylan, and Audrey Moran, Senior Vice President of Corporate and Social Responsibility at Baptist Health. Join us now in studio. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So this has been going on for some years, Michael. Used to have another name, but now it's been rebranded. It's Girls Day Out, Good For You.
It is. It's one of my favorite days of the year. 1,000 women and me, I just love it. But in all seriousness, it's been very important to us. The assets WJCT brings to this community, obviously, are the platforms and the way that we can aggregate folks. But content and resource people, we need to turn to. So Baptist has been a great partner with WJCT for the past 14 years in bringing together women and helping them and educating them about their health and that of their families. And we just find Baptist to be very, very instrumental in our success in this with this program. And so they're owning it more and more each and every year, and we're excited about that because the content is king in this process. I'll let Audrey speak to that.
Yeah, Audrey, there is so much happening for women at this event. It's not just health screenings and speeches, although those are great. There's a lot on the agenda.
There is. It's a full day, and it's really an amazing day. This event has gotten better and better. Our partnership with WJCT has really been terrific. You know how some events over the years get a little stale? Not this one. Every year it's better. The speakers are our best yet this year. The screenings you can get, the swag is amazing.
How about it? I mean, in fact, I was looking at the video we produced from last year, and a lot of the women that we interviewed said, these giveaways are really cool. I really am enjoying these giveaways. There were some really cool ones last year, but every year you kind of strive to come up with something new and exciting.
We do. It's a fun event. You're going to learn a lot. You're going to feel really good when you walk out the door and head home. But at the same time, it is one of those days that can be either just a morning, just an afternoon, or come and spend all day. But it's about taking care of yourself.
And, you know, that's so important because women typically put themselves last. They take care of their children, their families. They don't look after their own health enough.
And I think Audrey's absolutely right. This thing has been able to grow and develop because we treat women. It's a very special day for them. You are special. You deserve this day. And we make a very sincere effort. And we spend an entire year putting together the program. We take a look at the results from last year, the feedback we received from the women. They are, in many respects, the producers of this event because we use their input in shaping this year's program.
Let's talk about the keynote speakers. One that we had on the show a few weeks ago, Jessie Close, talking about mental illness. She's an ambassador for Bring Change to Mind, a nonprofit. She founded that, and her sister is the award-winning actress Glenn Close. That gives you an idea that that's a public health issue that can touch anybody's family.
And we've seen, obviously, a lot of focus this past year in our own community on the issues of mental health and a problem that I think we all need to face and recognize that it is endemic to our community.
Well, and I think one of the things that's important to note is that Baptist Health is the leading provider of mental health care in Northeast Florida. From children to frail elderly and everybody in between, it's a commitment our board of directors has made to say, we're going to stay the course, provide this care at a very high level, and we're also connected to a lot of community partners who are working on stigma, just like this keynote speaker will be talking about. We sponsored the JCCI study that really lifted up mental health and what we need to do in our community to do better. And I think people are going to find her remarks to be very, very powerful.
Absolutely. And she'll speak in the morning, but that's just one of many highlights throughout the day.
We have a second keynote speaker in the afternoon. We always might make that light. So as the ladies leave at the end of the day, they feel really good about the time they've spent and leave laughing. That's a good way to leave.
And this is at the Hyatt, by the way, downtown Jacksonville, coming up this weekend. Still time to get some tickets. People need to come out and bring their girlfriends, bring their mom, bring their sister, bring anyone that you care about.
This is a great way to go bring a daughter, bring an aunt, bring a friend, or just come yourself. That you will find something for everyone on this day. It is energizing. It's one of those experiences you leave feeling great, and we couldn't do it without WJCT. Baptist Health is very, very grateful for the long-term partnership there.
Absolutely. This is 14 years now, a tradition in Jacksonville. It's wjct.org/goodforyou to get your tickets.
Thank you. Yeah, we look forward to the opportunity to see anybody. Please come out. You'll enjoy the day.
Yeah, this is this Saturday, so mark your calendar, get your tickets. Michael Boylan and Audrey Moran, thanks for stopping by and letting us know all about it. It's sure to be even bigger and better than ever. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a program. Subscribe to our daily podcast now on iTunes and Stitcher. And next on Diane Rehm, across the country, many schools are struggling to find qualified instructors in areas like science and math. California has more than 20,000 slots to fill this academic year. A look at what's behind a nationwide teacher shortage and what states are doing to address it, that's up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.